Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Reason is the ability to arrive to a conclusion step by step with a discursive kind of reasoning, thinking. Intuition or intellect is the ability to jump to that conclusion. But Spinoza was saying, in reality, intuition and intellect is nothing else than reasoning at the speed of light.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Marketing Vanguard podcast. I'm Jenny Rooney here at Adweek, and I am thrilled today to be joined by Mauro Porcini. He is PepsiCo's first ever chief design officer. He has been there since 2012. And Mauro, I'm so excited to be joined by you today. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me. And perfect pronunciation of my name, by the way.
I tried. I'm sure perfect is not true, but close to it, I hope. But I'm thrilled to have you here. I mean, listen, you could probably steer this podcast yourself with one hand tied behind your back. But for those who don't know, I'd love to share a little bit about you at the top here. As I said, you joined PepsiCo in 2012. In that role as chief design officer, you're infusing design thinking into PepsiCo's culture and is leading a new approach to innovation by design that impacts the company's product platforms and brands, which include Pepsi, Lay's, Mountain Dew, Gatorade, SodaStream, Doritos, LifeWater, Bubbly, etc. And your focus extends from physical to virtual expressions of the brands, including product, packaging, events, advertising, fashion and art collaborations, retail activation, architecture, and digital media. It is such an extensive remit, and I need to ask you this first question, Mauro. How do you tie all of that up in a bow? Because it's just so extensive.
I think the key is to have a vision. I call it the dream more than the vision, but we can translate it also with a word that is, you know, more business friendly. But it is literally a dream. And there are multiple phases of this dream. The first one is the one of reaching as many people as possible. And this is what companies like PepsiCo, one of the opportunities that companies like PepsiCo give you, the ability to reach billions of people all around the world by reaching as many people as possible, trying to create value for them, some form of value, functional, emotional. This is what I studied as a designer when I was 18, 19. I started to study design. This is what they teach you at school. They teach you to observe people, understand their needs, their wants, their dreams, and create something valuable for them. This value can come in different forms and shapes. It could be convenience, it could be fun, it could be style, but there is some form of value. And then they tell you, by the way, you also need to sell them this stuff that you create, these products, these experiences, these brands, these services. But what drives designers is this ambition and this desire, and at the end of the day, this dream of creating value for people. So when you, as a designer, enter a company like PepsiCo, historically dominated by marketing, sales, business goals, you know, the aim of growing the business of this big corporation all around the world, the first thing you think as a designer is, wow, I have an amazing opportunity to reach as many people as possible to create value through design. Now, an enabler of that is to make sure that companies like PepsiCo understand the value of design, understand what design is about, understand what design thinking and design centricity is about. But this is just, once again, an enabler to do something that is much bigger and broader and more purposeful, that is the creation of value for people. So you will hear me many times, you know, if you check online interviews and conferences, you know, I'm a big ambassador of design. But the reality is that this is really an enabler for something bigger. I'm an ambassador of human centricity. I'm an ambassador of creating value for people. And I strongly believe that if you do create value for people, then you create also financial value for the companies you work for.
Okay, so I have two quick questions on that. How would you distinguish, what's the difference between design and creativity?
Design, well, first of all, there are multiple interpretations of design. So design as such is that discipline that is all about creating solutions for specific people needs and wants. This solution can take different kind of shapes, products, brands, services. We talked about this a second ago. Design thinking starts to be closer to the world of creativity.
Yes. Yep.
And is the thinking that then enabled you to create those solutions. And there are three different lenses that you take in consideration, you know, is the world of people, desirability, the world of business, viability, and the world of technology manufacturing, so the feasibility lens. So design thinking is all about creatively thinking solutions for those people using these three filters to identify those solutions and with an iterative kind of process, develop them and taking them to market. Creativity is somehow the how. So is, I often define creativity as intuition in action. So if your goal is to design something, design thinking is your methodology and your way of thinking, the enabler to find the best possible solution is creativity. And creativity, once again, is this connection between an intuition that you have translated in action. The action is the creation of stuff. That's why we call it creativity. Now, defined as such, it may sound like something very emotional that comes from your guts, because that's what you think when you use a word like intuition. The truth is that intuition is something that you nurture, is something that you train, is something that you develop in time. The philosopher Baruch Spinoza, hundreds of years ago, was making the difference between intellect and intuition on one side and reason on the other. Reason is the ability to arrive to a conclusion step by step with a discursive kind of reasoning, thinking. Intuition or intellect is the ability to jump to that conclusion. But Spinoza was saying, in reality, intuition and intellect is nothing else than reasoning at the speed of light. So essentially, to have that kind of reasoning, to arrive to the conclusion, is very, very important. Your training, your background, your curiosity, all the learning you have been developing over the years, you keep accumulating. This will emphasize, will amplify your ability to have what we call the intuitions, that nothing, that is nothing else than connecting the dots, the data, the insights accumulated over time at the speed of light. And then you transform it in action, and creativity comes from that.
So let me ask you this. I mean, obviously at a company like PepsiCo, you're going to, you know, you get reams and reams of data and, you know, analysis and financial numbers. But you keep talking about, you know, you started the conversation talking about this concept of value and making sure that your reach and the reach that you have, and literally, you know, having an impact on individual human beings. What for you, Mauro, is your sense of success in any given day? What gets you so excited because you see what you see something and you're like, that worked, that caused value for somebody? And I don't mean the numbers and I don't mean all the financial data. I mean, what's an example of something that gets you so happy and excited?
Is the smile of people, so their reaction. And is a smile, you know, is a real smile, but it's also a metaphorical smile, a smile and the positive energy you can feel literally online when they react to a project, when they react to an initiative that you led. And then in general, you know, I've been always a sort of entrepreneur within mm-hmm. these companies. 12 years in PepsiCo, 10 years at 3M. I was lucky enough, and before that I had my own agency. I created my own agency. So I've been lucky enough all these years to come in and build my own enterprises within these enterprises. Mm-hmm. And because of this, I've never been somebody thinking, well, I'm going to have a 2-3 year cycle and then I'm going to think about my next job, my mm-hmm. promotion to a different role, or eventually I go out of this company, I go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. I've been always in for the long run, for the, you know, for the long-term projects. And the Meta project has been the one of creating the right culture within these companies, a mm-hmm. culture of design, but in other words, it's a culture of human centricity, to then enable me, my team, to design those products and those brands and those services in the proper way. So a lot of energy comes from the journey and then step by step looking back and seeing, you know, how far we came from where we started, but always reminding also the dream and remembering where we're going. Now, why this is so important? Because in the day-to-day, then this job is painful. I mean, it's tough because every day you are there trying to change the game, trying to rewrite the rules, try to, you know, do things that people don't expect, are not used to, and they're perceived as risky. Mm-hmm. And the real innovator is the one that when you achieve something, when you arrive, you know, maybe you change a big chunk of the culture of your company. Maybe you were able to deliver projects that nobody expected. Once you get there, you're already thinking about what else can I change? So the real innovator will live his entire life, her entire life, in this kind of condition of uncomfort, of, you know, perception of risk, of transformation. And so unless you have the dream, and you have also the ability to step back and appreciate where you're coming from and celebrate that, if you don't have that, it's tough. Because yeah. in the day-to-day, it's difficult. It's really, yeah. really difficult. And again, just to close what I said at the beginning, the smile of the people you serve, the smile of the people, you know, out there, consumers, customers, users of any kind, when they react to those projects is powerful. When we launched recently the redesign of Pepsi, seeing, yeah. you know, that's a difficult project because when you redesign a brand that is known all around the world, that is iconic, that is loved, that has been around for 125 years, the risk to screw it up is really, really big. And so imagine the tension of me, my team, you know, years of project. Now you're ready to launch it. What is going to happen? When you see billions of impressions with 99% positive sentiment, that's where you get a lot of energy. And, you know, but this, yeah.
People, how long people, was that people. In the works, by the way?
Yeah, it took years to redesign Pepsi because when you have a design team in-house, for projects as big as the redesign of an iconic brand, there is not a start, a beginning and an end of that project. You don't go to an agency and you tell the agency, well, we need to redesign Pepsi. You have 6 months to come up with an idea. Then we do some testing and then we launch it in 1.5 years. At a certain point, yes, you have an official start of the project. Yes, you have a timeline and you need to respect the timing and everything. But the truth is that the thinking about what is going to happen to the brand, the thinking about the future of the brand starts long before. I joined the company in 2012. The company launched the new design of Pepsi in 2008, 9, depending on the regions of the world. But when I joined in 2012, many countries didn't embrace the new design yet. Mm. And Indra Nooyi, the CEO back then, asked me to try to unite the world of Pepsi around one visual identity system. So I was there. I was working with Brad Jakeman, that back then mm-hmm. was the business leader, the president of the Global Beverage Group.
Yep.
And we were trying to figure out exactly how to do it. And the first thing that I did as a designer was to talk to people and ask them why you're not embracing this new design. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the feedback were the design didn't have enough energy. you know, the energy of Pepsi, this really, you know, this kind of energy was typical of the brand. And it was very minimal, very simple. And so the first thing we did to unify the world, instead of just imposing it to them, we tweak the design to give it more energy. So we changed the blue from a darker blue to a lighter blue. We made the logo, the globe, bigger on the can, on the bottles. We even changed slightly the typography. So the font will, you know, was looked like the previous one, but it was a little bit more bold, a little bit more fat. Again, the goal was to add more energy. We couldn't redesign the logo and the brand. It was too early. So we did that. And with that, we were able to align all the world around that design. But we knew that sooner or later, in the future, we were going to redesign it. So what we did over the years, every time there was a limited edition packaging, every time, for instance, we were having an experience like Super Bowl, and we needed to design activations and contents for Super Bowl, or the UEFA Champions League, or collaborations with the fashion world. Every time we were, in reality, also often testing ideas of what the future Pepsi could be. As an example, if you look at the Super Bowl visual identity system for Pepsi of the past few years, before the relaunch, the blending of the black and blue, and this visual asset that we call the poles, so these circles that emanate from the globe, were already there. We were testing this idea of blending black and blue because we knew the world was changing, that we really wanted to push zero sugar. The color of zero sugar is black. The color of Pepsi full sugar is blue. And we're trying to understand how we could merge the two worlds in one consistent identity for the different formulations. Or we've been launching over the years some vintage Pepsi cans in limited editions, you know, trying to figure out how people will react to that. We've been doing a lot of things over the years, all around the world, all the time, trying to see how people were reacting to different ideas. And then proactively we started to design ideas, what the brand could look like in the future, far before the project got activated, far before anybody asked us to do it. Mm-hmm. And we started to pitch it to marketing, pitch it to the CEO. And then step by step, the excitement started to raise. People started to get excited about that idea. And at a certain point, the project started in a more official way. But there was so much work done before. And this is not just for Pepsi. This is true for a variety, not for all the brands. It will be too much, you know, to do it for all the brands. But for brands and platforms, SodaStream is another one where we've been working so much on an idea for a sustainable platform for our beverage portfolio before the acquisition. So that when the company started to think, well, we could acquire this brand and this company called SodaStream, we have so much work done on what a sustainable platform could be like, and design was part of those conversations. And then there was the acquisition of SodaStream as a company, as a brand, as a product platform. But then a series of other projects that we are developing in-house merged into the new business unit with one common goal, the one of making our beverage portfolio more sustainable through those technologies.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Which is so interesting because I think that speaks also to design is so much more than it's mentioned in your bio. I mean, it's so much more than the physical product. I mean, design applies to so many different things. I need to ask you this question. PepsiCo has such a history. I mean, it's one of the major marketers in the world, and as a consequence, has always had. I mean, it is known as one of the very few, marketing talent cultivators in the world historically. I mean, so many marketing leaders, CMOs have come out of Pepsi. And in fact, Pepsi has a lot of CMOs. How do you work with the chief marketing officers and the marketing leaders in the organization? What is the dynamic that you engage in?
Look, you're right. I'm not saying this because I work for PepsiCo, but I work every day with a number of talents that is mind-blowing. And I'm saying this because I've been 12 years out of 30 of career in this company. So I've been also in other companies. I've been exposed to many different realities. And the caliber of the marketers here is outstanding. The most brilliant one are the ones that understand their strengths, but understand also their limitations. Yeah. And they are not afraid to embrace diversity of thinking in what they do. Mm-hmm. I feel lucky and privileged because I found many of these people in the company. Mm. But over 12 years, I also found people that didn't have that kind of mindset. And especially, you know, this was a big learning at a certain point. I remember when, you know, you may divide, you know, I love to do these polarizing divisions, you know, to convey an idea. So let's say the marketing community, there are the more operational marketers. They're the one that are really, really good at operations. And then there are the one that are more creative. Mm-hmm. You know, at the beginning, I was thinking, well, if I need to choose between the two, probably the best marketer to partner with is the creative one. I realized very quickly that was not true, and it was not enough, at least. Yep. I found very creative marketers that were so creative that they didn't respect the creativity of the design world. It was a different one. It's just a different kind of creativity, complementary to marketing, but you need to respect it and you need to empower it and you need to give space.
Well, we learn more from frankly, the dissimilar than the similar, right?
So, yeah.
I mean, that's a huge...
So on the other side, I found amazing partners who are more of a operational kind of marketers, you know, eventually less creative, but they respect the design more. The truth is that the ideal marketer is the one that can combine the two, the two dimensions. And with the one that were combining the two dimensions, super creative, but really good at execution as well. But then also, on top of it, had this ability to respect diverse thinking and embrace it and give it space and really work together, with them, we did magic things. And that's why, at the end of the day, you know, I wrote it also in my book, in the Human Side of Innovation, is all about people. You know, you can talk about processes, you can talk about capabilities, what marketing does, what design does, what sales does, but at the end of the day, it's all about how the people manage that know-how, those tools, those platforms. And so, just in the example I made, the ability to respect others, the ability to get out of your comfort zone, the ability to empower others, and so on and so forth. The curiosity. Curiosity is one of the key drivers of innovation. The curiosity of being intrigued by somebody that is different from you. It could be a designer. It could be somebody coming from Asia. It could be a woman if you're a man. It could be a black person if you're a white one. You know, the curiosity of seeing in that diversity of background the precious gift of knowledge. You know, there is something that you don't know because you just have a different perspective. It's not that your perspective is worse than the other or is better. It's just different. And so the best leaders are the ones that understand how important it is, that difference, and embrace it, and together in a teamwork kind of effort, with empathy, with kindness, with high EQ, are able to connect everybody around one dream, one goal.
Well, let's really quick, because our time is short, but I have so many more questions. But I want to ask you, I mean, PepsiCo is a massive, massive company, multinational, so many products and brands. You know, honestly, obviously, it makes sense for that kind of a company to have a chief design officer. Do all companies need chief design officers? Do you think there's a role that design, that kind of person who owns the design priority, has, should that be a priority at all companies, arguably?
I profoundly believe that every company needs a chief design officer, but you need the right kind of profile. A chief design officer is much more than a designer. And this is a mistake that I saw many companies doing over the years. They look for design leaders and they hire great designers eventually. But the chief design officer is much more than just a designer. So he's a designer, so you need to know design inside out. Already that is very complicated, because you study design, you may study graphic design, or you may study industrial design, or fashion design, or experience,
or digital. Organizational
design. They're they're all different. It's like if you study biology, or you study chemistry, or you study, you know, in science, we know, you call it science, but they're all very, very different disciplines. Mm. So first of all, the great designer is the one that understands all these different dimensions, because in this world where the brands are on stage 24/7, across every touch point of the brand itself, they manifest themselves through many, many different touch points, you need design leaders that understand how to design the right product, the right packaging, the right communication, digital, physical, experiences, all these dimensions. Already that is super difficult to find, because there is no school that prepare you for that. Mm. But on top of that, you need people that know how to talk about business, that deeply, deeply understand the business world, the strategy, and they also know how to pitch design, how to present design, how to storytell the value of design. So understanding of design, understanding of business, storytelling of that value, and then the ability to bring others with you. So inspire others. And these others could be the top executives, your peers in different functions, and your teams. Because the reality is, when you build a new capability from scratch, it could be design, but it could be any other capability, a big part of that job is culture transformation. It's literally changing the way the company think, and then immediately after, or together in parallel, the processes, the ways of working of the company. So every company needs a chief design officer, because these kind of people bring to the table a different complementary perspective to the one on marketing.
Best advice you'd give to chief marketing officers against that thinking?
You need to find the right people. You need to empower them and not be afraid of that diversity of thinking that they bring to the table.
Yep. I have to ask this question, Mauro, because this is obviously, you know, and everybody asks this question, but I do think asking it of you is particularly interesting. What's your take on AI and the rise of AI and how it's going to affect? I mean, you know, obviously people talk about how it's going to affect creativity, human creativity. How do you think it is? How do you think it's going to have effect on design priorities?
I'm a big, big fan of AI. I am a big fan of any new technology that come to life and somehow can reshape the way we work, we imagine the future, and we create that future. I think that AI, until the moment when it will be able to recreate completely a human being, so the way we think, we feel, we act, until that moment, and when we arrive to that moment, we'll have a variety of different problems that have nothing to do with creativity, design, and marketing. You know, the AI may think, why do we need human beings at all? But hopefully we'll never arrive to that moment. Until that moment, AI is just a tool, is a platform. And you need ability of humans to have intuitions, to dream, to make mistakes. I used to work at 3M, the company of Post-it. Post-it came out of a mistake of a human. And then, you know, there was one human that made that mistake in the laboratories of the company, and there was another human that saw that mistake and decided to pitch it to the business organization. And with a lot of resilience, it pushed it until it went to market and it was super successful. So there is always that human component in the way you use the tool that makes all the difference of the world. And the beauty of AI is that it's going to make our work by far more effective. It will increase speed. It will increase the ability to explore different kinds of scenarios and solutions in a very efficient way. It will unlock also diversity of thinking. You know, as a designer, at the end of the day, I'm in front of a white page, as well as a marketer, by the way, any professional. You are in front of your blank page and you need to figure out the next campaign, the next product, the next thing. You get to that with your biases, with your background, with your history, with your experience. And it's so difficult to change perspective and come up with new ideas. Now, there are multiple ways to do it without technology. Just having conversations with people different from you, traveling, reading books, you know, really trying to change that perspective, because innovation at the end of the day is always about looking at something with, you know, that everybody looks at and you look with your eyes. Then other people look at the same thing with different kind of perspectives. If you engage in conversations with these people, my perspective, number one, is going to connect with your perspective, number two. And we're going to create, if we blend it with respect, a third perspective that is perspective number three and is the innovative one. Now, AI can play a role in this, because the moment I write a prompt, for instance, for a new idea, and AI is going to leverage her background that is different than my background, AI will surprise me with solutions that I didn't expect. Now, these solutions are not by definition the right ones. The role of those solutions is to ignite new thinking in me, to inspire me to think in different ways, to break the boundaries of my biases and my perspective and create a third new perspective that is the perspective of AI merged with mine that could create something very innovative. And again, machines and humans working together to create something special and different for the future.
Well, I feel like we're going to need a part two of this conversation because there's just so much more, and we've really only scratched the surface. But, you know, as a last question, I'll ask you this. Who else should we interview next for the Marketing Vanguard podcast? Who else out there is somebody that you admire so much, either from afar or somebody you know very, very well? But who should we have on this podcast for conversation?
Look, I don't know if you interview him already, but my friend Joe Gebbia, the founder of Airbnb,
the co-founder. I have not yet had him on, but I
will. He is great. He's great because he combines, he's a designer. So that's interesting. A designer that founded a business like Airbnb. And he combines the ability to dream and execute a really concrete project like Airbnb with purpose, with this dream of doing good for humanity. So it's going to be and he's a great storyteller as well.
Awesome. Okay. I will reach out to him and I'll come back to you at some point too, because like I said, we need a part two. Thank you so much for joining me, Mauro. And I'm sorry if I did butcher your name, because you say it so much more eloquently than I do, but, but I'm thrilled to have had this conversation. Thank you so much. And let's definitely talk again very soon.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to Marketing Vanguard, part of the Adweek Podcast Network and Acast Creator Network. This podcast was produced by Jordan Pratano, executive produced by Al Manarino and John Heil, and edited by Lane McGibney at Boutwell Studios. You can listen and subscribe to all of Adweek's podcasts by visiting adweek.com/podcasts. Stay updated on all things Adweek Podcast Network by following us on Twitter at Adweek Podcasts. And if you have a question or suggestion for the show, send us an email at podcast@adweek.com. Thanks for listening.
Hey there, podcast fam. Are you ready to break free from the social media rut? Hold on to your hatch, because we've got just the thing for you. Meet Viral Growth, your one-stop shop for leveling up your online presence. Whether you're a personal brand or a company, they've got the tools and know-how to take you to the next level. With Viral Growth, forget about those endless hours of video editing. They handle everything from brainstorming to polishing your content so you can just focus on being awesome. And guess what? We're hooking you up with a sweet deal. Use code ADWEEK for 10% off when you sign up. Ready to take your social media game to the next level? Head on over to viralgrowth.io and let's turn those digital dreams into a reality.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.